outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey. The God Journey.
Well, it's another Tuesday morning special here at the God Journey, filling in with a couple of podcasts from time to time. In fact, I've got probably a pretty long one that's going to air on Friday, so get ready for about an hour-long processing a journey with somebody. And I think that conversation will be incredibly helpful. And I also think we'll probably do an after show on Sunday. So those of you that are hearing that podcast from Friday want to join us on Sunday morning Pacific time. We'll probably make it a little later so our New Zealand friends don't have to get up quite so early. But if you want to join us, stay tuned to the website for that. That'll help you. I'm with Kyle Rice again. Kyle, welcome back.
Happy Tuesday to you, Wayne.
It's not Tuesday. It's Monday as we're recording. Let's keep the time warp consistent or I get very confused.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Well, happy Monday to you then.
I don't live in the future. Thank you. Day after Easter. How'd it go for you guys?
We did. Yeah. We spent a little bit of time with my sister and her husband. And other than that, we spent time just enjoying time with Jess and I and my cousin Becca. So played lots of card games and ate some great food. And so, yeah, it was a very good weekend.
As I recall, you were doing a little Zoom thing with the family. How'd that work out?
We were going to, but it didn't work out.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, there was lots of comments, though, that it didn't feel like Easter. There was no Easter egg hunts, no Easter day or Easter service. There was no Easter baskets. And so there was some comments about it not feeling very much like Easter, but it was a very good weekend.
That's how we felt. Sarah and I were alone all day, which was fine. Went for a couple of walks and did what we normally do, but didn't involve a lot of kids and grandkids, except for about an hour of getting on the on a FaceTime call with my daughter and her family and my son in Denver and a niece of mine that lives down in Anaheim. And so that was a pretty fun hour. We at least got to have the little face-to-face, all the mockery and poking fun that goes on in my family. So, yeah, that was a lot of fun. But no, we had a good time. And then the evening we just sat down and read part of read the whole thing, 1 Corinthians 15, which is one of my favorite kind of reflections on the resurrection, not only his from that Sunday, but ours in days to come.
Very nice.
Cool. So listen, I got an email after our last podcast about betrayal. I thought it was interesting enough to say, hey, let's follow up on this because I think it'd be fun to talk about. We talked about it from one side, the side of being a betrayed person and how do you process that and how do you find a way to go on. And if you haven't heard that, you can back up and listen to that podcast if you want to. It's one right ahead of this one. But this is what, this is a good friend of mine. His name's Jack. He's from South Carolina. I've stayed in their home a couple of times, he and Tracy. He said, what might be a very deep conversation would be for someone who was the betrayer to come in and talk about their experience in it and how they navigated back to the one they wronged. Might be hard to find someone willing to do that. My good friend Peter, as in the Gospels, had some of that in his life. There's so much to his story. It makes me wonder and smile. So it kind of got me thinking, wow, we didn't even cover it from that side of things. And we kind of racked our brains a little bit, see if we knew of someone like that. You thought of somebody, but haven't been able to get a hold of them. So I don't know. Maybe we'll bring Peter in. We'll bring that. Have you ever felt like you really betrayed somebody in some way, then went back to kind of own it later?
I would say there were definitely times that I did hurt somebody's feelings, or there was a time where with Jessica, my wife, that I didn't communicate something very well and kind of went behind her back when I was communicating that and ended up doing some things behind her back. But it wasn't a major betrayal in the sense of it could potentially threaten the stability of our marriage or threaten a business thing or threaten a job thing. I was trying, as I was reading through the email and thinking about, was there a time that I felt like I'd really betrayed somebody? There wasn't anything that came to mind as far as a major betrayal that was one of those moments, like when your friend, who was the pastor that put your letter of resignation in for you when you didn't know that, that was a life-altering thing for you. And so I was trying to think of if there was a betrayal or a moment where I had done something that it was life-altering enough that I had to go back and really go through the process of restoration and seeking reconciliation and seeking forgiveness. And there wasn't anything that really stood out to me. What about you?
Yeah, I've been racking my brain because I would love to find something from my past like that. But for me, betrayal is a huge word. I don't look at betrayal as a misunderstanding or a miscommunication. You got to go say, hey, you're sorry. That's not what I meant. Or, you know, clarify things. That happens all the time in relationships. There are endless opportunities I've had to sit down with Sarah and go, you know what? I didn't communicate that well, and I'm really sorry, because the message she gets and the message I meant to send were very different. To me, that's not betrayal. That's just the stuff of relationship. Betrayal is a big word for me. It means we had a promise, we had a commitment, and you cheated and lied, and it cost me something huge. And I'm trying to think where I would have done that to someone else. And honestly, I've had plenty of relationships. In fact, probably every relationship I've ever had has got miscommunications in it. And it's got things you think you're doing and the other one, you think the other one's understanding. And it turns out you were on totally separate pages. And so they may have felt betrayed or felt I did them wrong. But look and say, oh, gosh, you know what? That's an honest misunderstanding. I wasn't trying to blow anything by you. So I think it was a really big word like that. I didn't land on one. And I would say, man, if you're listening to this and you've known me from somewhere and you feel like I have, come at me, man. I would love to have this conversation. If you think, Wayne, I really did feel betrayed here. I'd be happy to sit down, talk about it, see what there is to own about it. Because I love reconciliation. I love the other side of this, where people who have been even betrayed. I remember in one of the incidences from my past, there was a tangential character to the whole episode of the lawsuit who'd been a friend of mine for 15 years. And I couldn't understand how this relationship had gone awry. Suddenly he withdraws from it. He's not answering emails. He's not. And I don't get it. I don't understand. I tried to call him, leave him voicemail. Hey, what happened? Is something wrong? Can we talk? Just never heard back from him. And then during discovery, which is a horrible process, if you've never been through discovery, run from it. Discovery is I get to read every email someone who was my friend sent other people, never intending for me to see it. It's like a godlike view of the universe, because now I'm seeing communication that's honest and raw and cruel, but never intended for me to see. And I saw this email, and he was part of that. So there's a lot of emails in there. And now I see why everything's happened the way it's happened, that he was being dishonest. He was trying to steal something. He was in cahoots with that until they found out that they couldn't do what they wanted to do. And then he just withdrew. And about a month after I found that, because I've really missed this friend. He was a great friend of mine. And he got led down this road. He voluntarily went down this road, whatever. But man, I can give a pass to a guy that's made a mistake. This guy didn't cost me an exceedingly amount of money. He didn't, you know, well, in some ways he did. So I wrote him along. I just wrote him an email. I said, man, listen, I was at a place where you and I normally go, really missed you, was there kind of, and I sent it out to about three email addresses I had. Just saying, look, I have read all the email. I know everything you've ever done, and even the things you did that were hurtful to me. But I'm not going to hold those against you, man. I want the friendship so much. I would love for this to be restored. And never heard back from him.
Really?
Yeah. And it's been another 10 years since. And I think about it from time to time. Tried to get in touch. Just not for whatever reason on that side of it. Not ready, not willing. I don't know what it is. So, but I wish I could think of a good one, and I would sure love for people to say, I think betrayal being the big thing it is, and Jack bringing up Peter's name. Peter's a great name for this, which again, I don't know if it's betrayal. I always put betrayal on Judas because that's the big deal. Peter's kind of a denial that I knew him. He's kind of panicked at the moment. He's not so much throwing Jesus under the bus as he is throwing their friendship under the bus to save himself. And so I look at that as a very different thing, but it's a great story because he went out and wept bitterly. I mean, you know, the pain in his heart, my friend needed me. I promised I'd be there. Even if they slay me, I will be with you. You know, Peter had it all lined out, and yet Peter's pain was less, I think, about what Jesus felt and was more about what he was feeling.
Yeah, and see, I've been wrestling with the story a little bit in regards to Judas versus Peter and the betrayal, and why do the authors constantly label Judas as the betrayer? And actually had an interesting conversation with somebody who is more from the Jewish perspective. They actually are Jewish and they've studied in the rabbinical tradition, and that's their background, that's their world. And their perspective was that Judas, in their minds, from the Jewish perspective, he wasn't really the betrayer. That his actions were out of his zealot lens. And so he had been constantly translating Jesus's teachings, his story that Jesus was going to be the Messiah. He was going to come. He was going to overthrow the Roman Empire. And he was going to be the person that was going to lead Judaism, the Jewish people, into freedom. And so this person's perspective was that Judas was actually trying to motivate his rabbi for his rabbi to step into the fulfillment of what his rabbi had been teaching. On the other side, from this person's perspective, if he was to ever betray his rabbi, that this Jewish individual that he actually trained under and was taught by and lived his life with, if he was to ever betray his rabbi, that would be seen as the ultimate betrayal. Judas made a mistake. In this person's perspective, Peter was committing the ultimate betrayal in the eyes of a Jewish person who was studying under a rabbi. And so I thought that was a really interesting perspective.
Does that make sense to you? Or is it just the Western? Because to me, I'm going, really? At what point did Judas expect Jesus to kind of step into his messiahship and do what? When he sold him, when he kissed him, when he watched him led away? I don't know. I mean, that may all be true. I just don't know how to wrap my head around it, to be honest.
As far as Judas and his background, I can see Judas as being a zealot and him wanting, and that's his background, that was his worldview, and him seeing Jesus through the lens of that. I can see that. There's some stuff that I still want to explore in regards to that perspective. But having known and researched to the degree that I understand, because I'm not from the Jewish culture, I haven't been born and lived in the rabbinical teaching style and format, but understanding and recognizing Peter's denial of his rabbi, that makes sense to me. Why, from a Jewish perspective, that was such a horrific thing to do. Because to be honored by a rabbi, to be selected to come and train under them, that's why, I mean, they had no problem leaving their jobs, leaving their families, and going, because that was an elite honor that a very, very small percentage of people from the Jewish community got to be a part of. And so to be selected and to be a part of that, and then when it came down to it, he denied his rabbi and disassociated himself from his rabbi. That would be, I was trying to think of a relationship at that level, that it would almost be akin to you and I in some regards, me saying, okay, Wayne, I've never, like, you going through a major struggle in your life, you going through a lawsuit, you call me in as a character witness to come in and speak on your behalf. And I go up in front of the judge and say, I've never known this guy. This guy has never come in contact with me. I don't want anything to do with him. Don't even dare bring me on the stand, because if I'm going to say anything, it's not going to be a benefit to this person.
I do, if that's what Peter had done. But Peter wasn't before a tribunal of any kind. He wasn't trying to testify for him. And I think the way Jesus relates to Peter through this versus what he says about Judas before, the son of perdition, and this Satan's entered his heart. And I mean, there's pretty clear that Judas is doing something that's more person defining, and Peter's having just a really weak moment. Peter's just going to, you know, he goes there ready to stand up for his friend, and he just panics and chickens out. And, you know, he says the thing that causes him just to grief in his heart. Jack's letter goes on that I've never imagined this is, I wonder how many times do you think he heard a rooster crow after the resurrection? How many times do you think he heard it crow? The way a sound or smell or even thought takes you back to a place or event. I'll bet hundreds. And I've always thought, oh my gosh, I don't know if I would see it that way, because I think Jesus and Peter got their moment on Galilee to kind of sort through the fact that Peter really did love him and had failed him, which was a failure of fear, not a betrayal of person in the same way. Judas seems more overt. I mean, it's a longer, you've got to work out the deal. You've got to go get the money. You've got to haul them out to the garden and kiss him and do all that. And if it's just misguided that this is going to, finally, Jesus is going to have to bring the kingdom. And I've heard this before. I've heard this perspective before. And I've always wrestled with it, because I'm going, okay, it might be true. I'm not saying it's not true, but for my mind to get around that being somewhat of a lesser and Peter's a greater, the only way I get ahead around that is because Judas was in fact doing what he had to do and had the devil driving him to do it. And Peter just bucks it at that moment. But even Jesus knew that was coming, right? Jesus said, you know, you're going to deny me three times, and I've already prayed for you. Your faith failed. Now. So Jesus has already passed the failure with Peter before he's even made it. Mm-hmm. And yet there doesn't seem to be a redemptive side to Judas's story. There's incredible sorrow, throws the money back, wants to take back what he's done, can't do it, hangs himself. That's a pretty tragic end to someone that made a kind of a lesser mistake, if that's how we're viewing it. I don't know.
And the interesting part is that this individual that I was talking with about this whole perspective, because it's a very new perspective for me as well, and coming from the traditional Baptist teaching that I've had, I hadn't ever really even considered it. And yet his thought about Judas was really intriguing. He said that Judas's betrayal of his rabbi was that he didn't believe that Jesus's grace and forgiveness was sufficient enough to cover what he had done. And so instead of moving into the love and the grace and the forgiveness that he had seen Jesus live out numerous times in the years that he walked with Jesus, he felt like he had to end his life. He felt like that was the only option. And so he ended up hanging himself. He ended up committing suicide instead of stepping into the forgiveness and the love that Jesus wanted to offer him. Because I completely believe that if Judas would have stepped back towards Jesus, Jesus would have done the same thing.
Oh, I agree with you completely.
And so that's an interesting perspective that Judas didn't view Jesus's love and grace as enough to be able to free him of the choices that he had made or the mistakes that he had made. And he had walked with Jesus in person for years, had seen all kinds of different, had seen him live it out, had seen Jesus live it out.
Yeah, but had always struggled, I think, with the priorities Jesus held, right? He was always worried about money and keeping the money, and this stuff's extravagant. Let's not do that. Could have been sold for the poor. I mean, he's kind of always at cross purposes with the kingdom. It's not like he understood it. Mm-hmm. There's this constant drive, seemingly, for money. He's not part of any of the wonderful stories of opening up and learning something. You know, even when, you know, James and John are fighting over who's first and second in the kingdom, they become part of a neat little story. Joseph, Judas, even when he's taken, you know, wishing the money wouldn't been spent on perfume that was poured on Jesus' feet. There's not part of a neat, well, I guess Jesus does say, you know, they're doing this for my death and great things will be spoken about them for whatever. So Jesus kind of redirects that, the poor you always have with you. This is a moment anointing me for my burial. But Judas doesn't seem to be in those learning moments.
Yeah, and I'd agree with that. And I think that for me is why I want to learn more about what was the zealot's perspective? Because, I mean, if a zealot was willing to go in and actually kill a Sadducee in the temple because they were aligned with the Roman Empire, then, and they kind of viewed themselves as the Robin Hoods of the Jewish people, where we rob from the rich to feed the poor, we are taking every opportunity we can to usurp the Roman Empire. If that was his lifestyle, if that was his culture, the lens that he viewed the entire world from, then I can see why. Well, why is this person spending this incredibly expensive perfume on me? And Judas's perspective is, oh, there's so many people that are starving. We could feed them with that money. And, you know, so if that's his worldview, then it starts to give me a little bit more clarity. But again, it's something very new for me that I'm still really wrestling through, because I've always come at it from a Western lens. And so to come at it from somebody who has more of, who grew up in a Jewish culture and has been scholared in the Jewish background and Jewish history, it's just a different perspective for me.
I wonder how much speculation that puts on the moment with Jesus, because he was called a rabbi a couple of times from his guys, but he wasn't a classical rabbi in the sense that he was recognized by the culture and part of the same training. And I mean, we don't catch that from him. And we also would have to say that if Judas is really convinced Jesus was his Messiah, he didn't trust him much to bring the kingdom about the right way. If he's going to crawl into that, I'm going to make you do it the way I think is best, then he's making the same mistake Peter made when it was like, when Jesus talking about going and dying, and he says, God forbid it, Lord. And Jesus says, no, you're only looking out for man's interest. You're not looking out for God's. God's got a different way of doing this stuff. And I get why. And James and John were zealots too. They didn't quite have the same response that Jesus did. But I think what Jack was asking us for is, let's look at, how does the betrayer, like as the betrayed person, if I've been really worked over by somebody, and like my friend, I write him a note, hey, let's get together, try and call him. There's a way I can invite people back in. And I've done that with everybody who has had these moments with me. To me, relationships are always more important than even my hurt. So I'm always willing to work back, but I'm almost always find the door closed. I don't find people who are really good at betrayal saying, oh yeah, let's fix this. And that's why you said you had someone in mind you knew had been through something like this. I know of two people, and I wouldn't want to bring them on because it'd be kind of self-serving. Two people have really owned major betrayals with me. And it came because they got in touch for one reason or another. One was after 10, 11 years of absolutely no conversation at all, an email that said, listen, everything that I did back then to you was wrong. I'm sorry, and will you forgive me? Now, that's the most blanket apology I've ever received in my life. Most people write an apology like, you know, if I did anything back there that hurt you, I'm really sorry, which is a non-apology, right?
Yeah.
Everything I did was wrong. I'm sorry. I know it hurt you. And I immediately wrote him back and said, wow, this is amazing. Thank you. I have forgiven you, but I want to let you know that. If you don't know that, I have. Now, did you write this just to clear your conscience with me? Because that's fine if you did. Or are you opening the door to relationship again? And since then, we've become related. We've become good friends again. That whole thing is healed. And it's marvelous. Had another couple that was part of that church betrayal thing. They were elders at the time. And they were really part of that whole thing kind of coming unraveled. And I hadn't talked to them in a long time. And they wanted to go to a meeting I was going to be a part of near them. And so this first time I'd heard anything from them in forever. Hey, Wayne, we'd really like to come and go to that. Is it okay with you? Is there any kind of problem if we show up? And I wrote back and said, well, they've asked me to speak about betrayal. And so I'm going to be real honest about what happened when you guys were there. Yeah. But yes, you're welcome to come. And as I share that, if you want to share your part and you have a different perspective and mine is wrong from your side, then you can give your perspective too, right in the meeting. I don't mind. I'm a real open, let's open it up and let's see where this really goes.
Yeah.
It turns out that they had gone through exactly the same betrayal with the same person that I had. Now, less financial cost because they weren't employed, but they walked into Sunday morning one day and saw in the bulletin that they were leaving as elders and planning a new church in the town, and they were praying for them and they had no idea. But they had already been discovering some stuff, and that kind of pushed them over the edge. I wonder what Wayne went through. They started listening to a lot of stuff at Livestream and just called up and said, hey, could we get together? And you know what I found on both of those things? When somebody who's been part of a major betrayal in your life comes to you and owns it and says, listen, I'm sorry, And in that case, second case, they actually had some misinformation. They were lied to as well, but they still made some decisions in that wasn't cool. And they could own that, even if they could explain to me, you know, we didn't know that you didn't send in a letter of resignation. We were told that you had.
Mm.
And I said, did you ever see it? And they said, no, we were promised that we'd get a chance to see it. But then somehow they could never produce it. They always had an excuse why they didn't have a letter of resignation from me. And yet I find, because then within a few months, our families were together up in the mountains, just because our kids had grown up together. And now they hadn't seen each other for a decade and a half. So, and we've stayed in touch since. And to me, it's a beautiful thing when something got marred by even our brokenness or our failures can get owned, can get forgiven, and can get on. That's a beautiful process. But it takes some courage. And I know in some, particularly if you have, you know, stolen someone's business or cost them a job, you've done something major, and just come back and say, you know, I'm sorry, I stole X amount from you. Then obviously part of that, I think, repentance apology is, how can I make it up to you? You know, there would want to be, in my mind, it's not, hey, I'm sorry, you got to forgive me. To me, repentance always involves, I maybe can't give you all that you would deserve, but what could we do to kind of right the ship here a little bit, not just to take advantage of you and then it's all good, let's forgive and forget and go on like crazy. To me, those are powerful moments. I hope eternity is a lot of that. We'll have plenty of time, but I hope I get to see every relationship through someone else's eyes, and things that I had no idea were hurtful, I'd get to see as hurtful. And I'd even get to see where I was trying to do a Peter thing, protect myself instead of just take the risk. And I would love to own it with those people. And if we don't get to do it here, I hope we get to do it there, where you could sit down with somebody without shame. There's no shame here. There's no, I'm a horrible creep, I did this ugly thing. Just, hey, I'm really sorry, man. I was weak, and I did the thing to save my life at expense of yours. And I'm really sorry. And to own it. And I've tasted a little bit of the healing that brings. It's amazing. Amazing stuff.
Why do you think that there's such a low percent that both you and I struggle to talk to or know someone who's been the betrayer that has gone through a restoration process and is now living a more wholehearted life after that experience? Why do you think it's easier to talk about being betrayed versus finding somebody who's navigated the journey of the betrayer?
Oh, that's a good question. I wonder if it's just embarrassment or guilt, or, you know, like, I wouldn't put that story on anybody.
Yeah.
You can ask somebody, man, because I hear it all the time. Now that I've been through some experience like this, I'm traveling. People are telling me their betrayal stories, ministry, business. I hear that stuff all the time from people.
Yeah.
But I have never, Jack actually is the first letter I've ever had where it's, well, what about the betraying person? What about them? How do they get back? Because I think it's as easy as making an apology and owning your stuff. And I don't think it's complicated to come back. But I think the more you've damaged somebody, the harder it is. You know, if you've cheated on your spouse, those are hard things to, you know, you cheated, you left your wife for another woman, and now you're sorry, now you're repenting to God. But you go back, you're already married. You go back to the first wife now and say, you know, I'm really sorry. I was bad and fleshy. And maybe some people do that. I think it'd be awesome. But it's really hard. If somebody's cheated you out of significant money, I don't know how they come back. I don't know. I think it's hard. And then I think people want to cover it over. They don't want to talk about it. They want to move on.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to let people move on as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, I don't know why we don't have those stories. We have lots of stories of betrayal.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus is a good story of someone who was betrayed and found his way back with Peter. Peter's a good story because that gets told. That's what I love about the Bible. The bad stuff gets told. It's not just the good stuff. And it's not just the bad stuff from bad people. It's bad stuff from really wonderful people that turned out to be, and that's the kingdom is, incredibly redemptive. It pulls us out of the darkest darkness into the light. Maybe part of that answer, though, comes in the last part of Jack's letter, which I found this paragraph. First time I read it, it didn't hit me. Second time I did, he was talking about, he kind of writing a Shakespearean tragedy out of Peter's life. And he says, the wounds, if they can be called wounds, which is even the wound of I betrayed someone else, that wounds some people. It wounded us in the fall, right? That's why God was open. I think God was open to reconciliation with Adam and Eve right away. I think Adam and Eve could have had a very different experience if they hadn't felt so much shame and fear that they went and ran off into the darkness. And we've got then to 2,500, 3,000 years of 4,000 years of covering up in the darkness or more. So there is a wounding in the person who does the betraying.
Yeah.
It says it festers and never heals over time as much as we would like them to. Mostly we hide our wounds like a soldier who is given to hiding in a foxhole while bullets are flying over his head. I thought this is an amazing analogy. It only makes sense to keep yourself in the foxhole. Who's crazy enough to stand up when those bullets are inches from blowing you to bits? So we have to hide ourselves. So we have made ourselves slaves to the foxhole because it is safe. Now, this is that sentence right there, which is is about coping mechanisms. And that'll be on the podcast on Friday if we get to air that. There's a whole deal of how coping mechanisms serve us well when you're in a survivalist situation, you're in a traumatic event. Mm-hmm. We come up with coping things like ducking in a foxhole makes sense when bullets are flying over your head. When bullets are no longer flying over your head and you're still owned by the foxhole and you're not about to poke your head out ever again in case another bullet, now the very coping mechanism that saved you now imprisons you.
Mm-hmm.
And so he says, so we have made ourselves slaves to the foxhole, which is a great expression, slaves to the foxhole, because it's safe. No one gets killed by hiding, or rarely. I think in an emotional sense, that's true. If I'm awkward, it's a difficult, I don't want to have the conversation, then just run from it. And I've seen people do that relationally all the time, even with misunderstandings I've had with people, that I go back and say, oh my gosh, they totally misunderstood. But now they can't talk about it because they have to be right to be whatever they need to be inside. They couldn't sit down and said, oh my gosh, did I misunderstand that? Could I have made a mistake? They can't do that for whatever reason, emotionally weakness. So he said, every person, which I don't think it's every, but every person learns how to hide in their own foxhole. Makes sense because the bullets of betrayal are just as real. They just don't look the same. So what I like about it is, you know, in these kinds of things, both sides get wounded. It's not enough to say, I was the betrayed. I got wounded.
Yeah.
The way sin works, we both got wounded. Now, where's the healing? And I think for a person who feels wronged, it's easier for them to lean into grace. In fact, you've got to get healing for it. But you don't do it with all the, wow, I really did a trashy thing. And now I'm going to, I do that in other areas of my life. But I haven't done it in a betrayal kind of way. And I love that analogy because I think so many of us, so many of those who do betray, like Judas, couldn't even find a way out of the foxhole. I'm just going to kill myself in it.
Yeah.
Peter, I don't know that he's looking for a way out. I mean, he just feels horrible about it. And Jesus comes and in that loving embrace of Peter, he gets to work it through because Jesus comes to him. So there's a chance to work it through, But I don't know. There's a lot of people. I watch more people hide in their brokenness just because it's too much risk. Because God isn't big enough, I guess, to hold me in my failure. And I get this conversation a lot with people. As long as I do everything right, God will be with me. And once I make a mistake, particularly a major mistake, particularly something I knew better and did anyway, and may have done it over a period of time where I had time to back out of it, but it was more calculated and more, you know, more premeditated, then people get really conflicted about God's grace and God's forgiveness. And they've got to run for a while until some of that guilt, whatever. And I think the cross was, you don't have to run at all. You can run right to him at your worst moment and be loved. And yet that's the hardest thing to do, I think, for people.
There's definitely a difference between being the perpetrator of a betrayal, where you intentionally took some type of action that caused a deep wound to another person, versus being the person who didn't have, quote unquote, perceived control to influence somebody else made a free will decision that caused a deep wound to me out of their brokenness, out of their hurt, et cetera. And yeah, but to be the perpetrator, to be the one that intentionally takes action to cause significant pain to another person.
So who gets wounded more in a betrayal? Wouldn't it be, I think the one who does the betraying has more difficult options than the one who's been betrayed. Even if you've been cheated and even if you've lost stuff, you've still got a way to negotiate in God to see how God makes that up in us, how God takes us on a different journey. If you've been wounded on the betraying side of it so that you feel guilt and distance, and now I've got to spend the rest of my life covering up and hiding in my foxhole. And I've never seen it that way until I got this email. I would think, gosh, the betrayed, obviously they're the wounded one. And you blame the betrayer. You blame the Judases. You blame the people who've done you wrong instead of realizing, oh my gosh, their pain, what they have justified, what they are trying to work through is 1,000 times more complicated than what I had to work through. And I've never had that perspective before today.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's also socially acceptable to be betrayed, but it's not socially acceptable to be the betrayer.
Yeah. Again, the husband who cheats on his wife, people can relate to the wife.
Yep.
And the people want to throw spears at the husband.
Crucify the husband. Yeah.
Or vice versa. It's not always the man who cheats. Okay. True. Let's give equal time to everybody. Women do it too. just so happens men seem to do it more, but it's still the same thing. It's easy when you can find someone to blame and we have quote unquote an innocent victim over here. It's easy to side with the innocent victim.
Yeah.
And then even not only do they have the wound of their own pain inside, now they've got the wound of everybody casting aspersions on them. Man, that's rough. But the pathway to Jesus is still there. That's, you know, and people aren't sure listening to this thing, man, I'm that guy. I've been on the bads. I've done my family wrong. I've done my business partner wrong. I had a good friend, honestly. He never cheated me. He was a good brother. He was just weak. And there's so many ways in business he made promises and then didn't fulfill them and then ended up going bankrupt and keeping people's money and doing, and then he would do it again and again. And I don't know how many times I had prayer with this guy, and I loved him. This guy was a great guy in so many other ways. But in terms of just honoring his word in business, and it wasn't so much he just out to cheat everybody. He had more aspirations than he had integrity. So he would get lost. This one's going to work out, and then it doesn't. And then he, like a coward, he runs. And I was his friend, man, all through his life. And I watched him hurt other people and I'd try to get him together and let's work it out. Let's whatever. And he would resist that. And this is a day when I didn't spend as much time with people who couldn't get it right. I wish I could. I would have loved him differently today if I could love him. Because there's a path in that brokenness, but you kind of hope the path means you'd stop doing this to people. Seems hard to keep leading people to the forgiveness and grace. And then they would turn around the next tight spot they get into. They would be that 4-year-old that's willing to lie to get out of it. Just take the pressure off, whatever.
Yeah.
And it hurts my heart. Hurts my heart to see that happen. But there's redemption. If you're one of those people that just kind of kept messing it up, you're separated from your kids because you did them wrong or whatever. I was writing someone today about that in their own family, separated from their daughter. And I just said, you know, it's not a relationship worth finding your way back into. And even if you've been the manipulative one of trying to get them, you're trying to fix them and they're resenting it because they're adults now.
Yeah.
Finding your way back to that relationship. Yeah. Find your way. There's a way back. There is. It may take years, but there is a way back. And just want to let God bring it into your life, show you how it works.
And I think the people who really take that risk to own it and to work through the healing as being a betrayer. That's why I really want to get my friends on or just have a dialogue with them about this, because they had a major sex addiction. They ended up getting a divorce. And over several years, this person went through an incredible healing process, ended up, both them and their spouse ended up falling back in love with one another, ended up getting remarried. And this individual now works as a professional counselor and is helping perpetrators work their way through the healing process.
That's great.
And so he's amazing, man, but a unique story.
Yep.
I don't know very many of them.
I tell you what, I'm sure the need is great out there for those prodigals to come home who in a major way hurt somebody else and maybe even willfully, intentionally. And yet that's what grace is all about.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.